Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo and we've got a dynamic guest today. We're going to be sharing his autobiography with you because it's a journey that he himself decided he wanted to share with people, a journey that took him into the company of fools and mystics. Dendiel Morgan is my guest. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Well, it is really interesting reading to go through your autobiography, Dendiel. I hope you don't mind me calling you by your first name.
It's perfectly fine.
Wonderful. I wanted to let my listeners know that you have a very nice dedication in the front of your book, but it is the last sentence in your dedication, "A grain of sand in the ocean of life, I am."
Yes.
And I thought, that is quite a statement. Because when we think about ourselves, and if we look at a bigger picture, we are like little grains of sand in this phenomenal universe of experience that we call life.
Yes.
And here you are with putting this book together. You had to go back and had to reflect on what you wanted to say. And from what you said in your book, you really hadn't planned on writing this at all.
No, I really, it wasn't in the making. It was actually 20 years ago of thinking about wanting to do this, but I'm a very private person, and so it was very difficult. And only recently, within the last year and a half, that I decided, to really bring this forth. After I had spoke to some of my fellow colleagues, and they said, "Hey, look, this is something that I you would bring a difference in a lot of people's lives." And I said, "Well, okay." Then I felt that it was a need to say it, and so I just put it all out there.
Tell us what a fool signifies to you and what a mystic signifies to you.
Shall we start with the government?
No, we won't go there.
No, but okay, we'll keep it. A fool is one, he or she, that has continually not learned from their mistakes. They continue to do things that are destructive to themselves and to others. They continually refuse to listen to what is said to them, that is spoken by many different people in a way, and is spoken in the same tone and with the same method or the same signature. And for whatever reasons, that person continues to live in what we call an illusion. And a mystic is one that he or she has decided to step upon what we call a path of self-realization, understanding the nature behind religion, understanding the nature of what really is going on behind this thing called the body, the spirit, the breath, pranic energy, chi energy. What is this thing that sometimes is so hard to describe in words, but I feel it in the core of my being when I meet another human being, or I touch an animal, or I touch a tree? What is this essence that puts me in that connection? So what happens is that mystic is on the journey of constantly evolving and becoming a service to all sentient life beings, and helping raising the consciousness of the planet and also the people on it.
You go into some of your family background. Tell us about your dad.
My dad, Nathaniel Eugene Morgan. He's still around. He was a gentleman's gentleman. He was also the first African American referee in the World Boxing Association back in the late 50s. he was the kind of guy that sort of really had a problem getting in touch with his heart. And, you know, most of my life, in the early years of my life, he wasn't there. But as time moved on and as I grew older, there was a way in which I had a way of reconnecting. But there was a problem in that whole aspect of doing that. There was a way in which he never really said that he loved me, or he never really reached out and showed any kind of thing. So initially I had to make the initial effort to sort of say, hey, look, I love you. And each time I would say that, he's like, I love you. Yeah, but it was so hard for him because he wasn't brought up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, it taught me a very important lesson of this thing called heartfelt. And as a male in our society, you know, we're taught in a way where, you know, a man doesn't cry, or, you know, he doesn't feel anything. And it's like, you know, and if a man doesn't have a way to express himself, there's a way in which he does other things, like cause wars. He does things, you know, in a very physical way to get attention, you know, or to express himself. And so there has to be a way in which, I mean, I can remember very much so, an elderly woman told me many years ago, he said, you know, boy, most of the people, you know, when we used to, back in our days, and she came from the 20s, in the late 20s, and she was saying, you know, when we used to call men were called gentlemen. And that term gentlemen means that they were real men, but they knew how to be gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, you say that now, and it has a whole different meaning. I said, yes, ma'am, it really does. And it's like, wow. You know, and so you look at those things. So from my father's point of view, he taught me a very important lesson about the matters of the heart. And even though he never really got, even today, he still keeps his distance. He still don't really allow himself to let anybody come close.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, it's part of what he grew up and through. As an individual, and as a man, this is a positioning he took to sort of protect himself. Now, you asked him four questions. You said, you asked your dad, what is your impression of today's human beings based on your years of experience? He said, good and bad people in the world. Good people are the ones to be around. You asked him, what are your feelings about God, heaven, death, and birth? And he said, I don't know. He said, with heaven, it's a way out. My mother did come back. She said, it ain't what you think it is. And he was standing in downtown Chicago when he saw her physical body like it was when she was alive.
Yes.
And then you ask him, what is the most value to you? What is of most value to you in this world? He said, my life. I'm never ready to go. And then you ask him a very poignant question. When you make your transition, how do you want to be remembered? He said, I want to be remembered as a man who helped people. What I mean is that being kind to other people, I don't ever try to hurt people. To me, that shows a lot of depth.
Yes.
And a lot of character on the part of your father.
Yes, it was, but he was never able to really express that in his physical interaction with other people. He was always I would call him a gentleman's gentleman. I mean, he was a very social person. He traveled around the world. He did many different things in many different countries and refereed. And he, you know, hung out with a lot of the celebrities and stuff. But he was always a gentleman's gentleman. He was there, and he was just a person like, hey, yeah, I love Nate, man. He's a great guy, man, yeah. You know, but he never really, and when it came to his personal life in dealing with his son, that was, you know, it was a problem for him to get close.
Your mother, Mary Lee Williams, she was a woman that taught you a great deal, and it was very touching, the information that you have about her. And you said one of the things that it taught you, what the things your mother taught you, was patience, because she had no tolerance of people being judgmental and self-righteous. And she said, thinking nobody knows it better than you, it's not the way it is. She had quite a powerful impact on your life. What were some of the other lessons you learned from her?
Well, one of the major lessons was that what I learned from her was it had a lot to do with judgment, but the judgment was based upon how she felt and how she saw it. She became very religiously fanatical in such a way where nothing else matters but what she read in the Bible, and so nothing else existed upon that. But at the same time, there was a way in which she judged everyone, even the grandkids. They had problems, you know, connecting with her, because each time they would come around, she would always just get on their case and tell them you're too fat and you're this and that. And it got to a point where they didn't want, even want to come around. They just, and so what I learned from that particular segment was basically, you got to let people be where they're at. You know, you really can't use this controlling and telling people what to do, you know? And it doesn't work that way. And that was one of the key things. Another one of the key things was also, it was a way in which she did life where it was based upon, here it is. I see it this way, and nobody else can see it any other way because they have to be saved. She went over to what we call the religious aspect more so, and that became a more prominent of what we call signature in her way of how she dealt with life. But it was a way in which the lack of understanding that I learned from her, because she was unwilling. I mean, she had never been wrong. And that kind of questions me when a person is never wrong and they never make mistakes. Something is wrong with that person, if, you know, because that's not the way life is.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a way in which I saw her like this, and she was kept displaying this aspect of never being wrong and very argumentative. And so as I was looking at this as a young person, and as I got up until age 18 when I left the house, you know, it's like, this is, something's wrong with this. This doesn't make any sense. And so by that example, what I saw, I started to realize, it's like, wow, okay, this is it. Don't be judgmental. Be patient with people. Because, you know, she was not patient with them. If they didn't do such and such, it's like, you know, get away from me, you know. You know, and so from that, it taught me the lesson. So the lessons between my parents, it was in a way of what not to be, you know. And, I mean, she has a good heart, but what it was just one-sided. And it was a way in which, you know, it displayed this aspect of this one-sidedness.
I want my audience to know a little bit about your background. You are the director and founder of Pathfinder Institute, the School of Yoga Heart, Meditative Movement, as a certified you're a yoga teacher, you're a swami, and also a professor of martial science. You're a seventh degree black belt in Chinese Kempo, Jiu-Jitsu, and Eagle Claw Kung Fu. And you're a specialist in yoga, martial arts, the five ring movement psychology. You have been teaching and training for over 39 years. You've been involved in all kinds of recovery programs, adult schooling, and many other types of training and education. You have written articles that have been put inside the Inside Kung Fu magazine, and currently you're the director of the San Francisco chapter of the International Association of Black Yoga Teachers.
I was.
Oh, no, you're not currently?
No, I resigned about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
But regardless, you have been in that position.
Yes, I have.
All of those disciplines, that's the word I will use, were part of your journey.
Well, yes, truly.
And you found that you had a lot of questions when you were younger. And how in the world did you get involved with the martial arts?
Well, I got kind of tired of getting my butt kicked.
Oh, that's a good reason to get involved.
You know, so at the age of 16 in the south side of Chicago, I started 1966 in Southtown YMCA and studied with James Jones Jr. and a lot of other folks that came along with that, Alvin Campbell, Preston Bacon, and a few other people, Norman and Pitchfork and some other folks. You know, I started that, but I was the youngest in a way when I started that, but it gave me a form of self-discipline that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I became very skillful in that, very skillful. And it also helped a lot with my dyslexia, because I really had a problem with, in the early years of my life, talking, being able to speak. And at the same time, I had so much on my mind, being able to, I wanted to say so much, but I just couldn't say it. And so I had really a problem just really being able to say it and produce it in a way where people could understand me. And so that martial arts really gave me the dyslexia. I mean, it really helped with my dyslexia and helped really be more zero in exactly what I needed to do for myself. And then from that point, when I got more deep into it and went into full contact fighting and all of the things that we did, in 1970 is when I got involved with the yoga. And that was a whole different thing there, because it was a way in which I started to notice the subtleties of myself and how much the spiritual aspect played a major role in what I did and what I said.
You make a statement about the true mark of a spiritual master is in his or her ability to control the environment and set the tone by his or her actions and very presence. Certain things don't have to be said.
Oh, boy. Oh, my gosh. Ooh. that's the thing. A person who is really in tune with what we call the divine essence of being, with life, what you start to notice is they don't have to prophesy or get out there on a stand and start yelling and screaming. Their very life is an example of what they live. That is the way that it was started in the early centuries. If you want to make a difference in a person's life, be that change that you want to see in the world. And so you carry that. And when people see that, it's like, wow, you know what? Boy, he or she is very peaceful. I like to learn what he knows because I really need some of that. And so what happens, that attracts and that draws. We are human beings of attractions. Whatever we hold in our minds is what we attract. And so what I learned in the early years of my life, because I was so introverted, I learned a lot about just being with myself, but at the same time, how much people's presence make a difference. I mean, we can look at the whole social environment that we're in. A person's presence and how they carry themselves in their bodies and how they project across the screen or in person says a lot about the character, if you know how to read into the body language of what they're really saying. Because basically 75-80% of all communication is based upon body language.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is based upon tonization, how people use words. But most people in general listen to just words, and they don't look at the body gestures that is constantly telling you everything.
Very true. That's when you can note who really is an effective speaker, or whoever is doing whatever they're doing, it is coming from the very essence of who they are, and it's like a magnet. It just pulls people in. It's absolutely amazing. You have a quote in your book by Paul Robertson that a dream that we've held so long in our hearts is today the destiny that we hold in our hands. Now, your life has brought you into so many different disciplines, one of which took you into law enforcement.
Ooh.
And talk about that part of your life, because having known so many different people in law enforcement, it is a world that most people, fortunately, do not experience. And it is sort of a dark side of the world. That's just what they deal with. What brought you into law enforcement? And when did you choose to make a choice that was no longer going to be a part of your life?
Well, what drew me into law enforcement, it was during the Carter administration in the 80s. And I got involved started off with a security agency first, and then I got involved with work. And then that security agency was licensed out by the federal government. So what happened, we became federal officers, and we worked with downtown in the Edward Dirksen building downtown Chicago. I became a sergeant at that point. I really wanted to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I saw was I saw a lot of injustice, you know, along with the concept of justice, along with the concepts of laws, because it's the old saying that a lawyer once told me many years ago. It's like, you know, the law is one thing based upon what's in the book. Justice is another, and a lot of times the laws that have been set for so long, they're unjust,
mm-hmm.
and so they have to be changed. But, you know, if you're talking about wanting to do justice, that's a whole different issue. You need to understand the nature of the law, as he was telling me. And, you know, and by understanding the nature of the law, you understand the nature of how to do things in a way. But when I got involved with the law enforcement, I saw a lot of things that I saw human beings, you know, witnessing people getting shot down, you know, coming to a scene after a homicide, after something that's happening where, you know, this is a man that, this is somebody's son, And you look at this and it's like, wow, you know, and see the things that other human beings do to other, you know, each other. Mm-hmm. What it does, it puts you in a certain mindset. And I noticed for that 10 years of being involved in law enforcement, because later on, I didn't want to really stay out on the street and stuff, so I really got involved more with the private investigation aspect of it, because I really wanted to be able to see a little bit more aspects or do something that was not so much as direct and seeing crime as it was, because it has a tendency, and anybody who's listening to me, who's involved in law enforcement, you know what I'm saying, that there's a way in which you have a whole different mindset about people. You're always, when you step into a room or you step into a restaurant, you scan it, and you can scan it in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pick out certain people that may be a problem, and you put yourself, you position yourself in a way where you could be able to react quickly if in any given situation. That is the mind of a law enforcement officer, you know, and because it teaches you to be constantly aware, because you never know when people are, the way emotions are and people are, you know, things that can happen. Or when someone walks through a door, and maybe they have a bulge or a certain thing in their pocket, or the way they walk, it gives you a strong indication whether they can handle themselves or not. And so you see all those things that are, you know, that there, and it's like, wow, you know, and then you begin to understand them. But what happens is, if you're not careful, it can taint your impression toward people. And what you start to look at, you start to say, well, what is this person up to? Why is he coming like that? Why is he asking a question like that? What does he want? And so, you know, what happens is, you if you're not careful, it really does that. And so what you have to do is just focus on the aspect of what the sincerity of the person. Notice the body language. And so by me being more familiar with the aspect of the language and body, I was able to read more so, you know, that there was other aspects that were going on, instead of, okay, this is only two people, the people who are out to get something and the ones who want to serve and help. And so, you start to look at it differently. But it took me to that place. But what got to a point where I saw so much horror, so much death, and so much inhumanity toward each other, that it started to taint my practice, because I was involved with some meditation and spiritual practices during that time. And it got to a point where I realized that, you know, carrying a gun, eventually I'm going to have to use it, and do I really want to be in that position, to have to take someone's life, or is this the kind of thing for me? You know, not everybody in law enforcement, you know, need to be there. There's some that can really make it a lifetime career, and they're able to really balance, you know, their time at home and their time on the force. You know, they can do that, but there's some of us, and I was more of a sensitive person, where you really, there's a way in which you have to do something else that is more subtle. And that's why I moved toward private investigation instead of being directly out on the forefront. Because, you know, it got to a point where I just really needed to learn how just to soften it, because it started to taint my impression toward people. And then as I did that, I had to slowly move myself away from that. You know, but knowing that if I continued on that way, somehow it would just really distort, and it would really disrupt my connection toward the past. Now, that's for me, but now not everybody can, you know, not everybody feel that way. Some people can really go, they can make it a career and retire. But for me, that was. And those people that are like me, that are listening to me, who are in law enforcement, you know what I'm saying? There's a level of sensitivity where you have to separate yourself from what we call your private life and that which you do on the street. But there comes a time where, it's an old saying, all life is rooted in reciprocity. Everything is connected to everything. You think you're separating it, but in truth, it has a way of bleeding into your private life. And so you have to find a way in which you can deal with it in a balanced way.
And now, here you have dedicated yourself to a great deal of service to others. And for those of you that have just tuned in, my guest is Dendale. Morgan, excuse me. His book is titled Lone Wolf in the Company of Fools and Mystics. You have been a teacher for years. Obviously, you've walked the role of a student. This is your autobiography. You make a statement in your book, the agreement of the teacher is to raise the consciousness of the student emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. The agreement of the student is to be willing to be open and do self-study, do that which is difficult, and trust in the outcome of the process of correct practice, to be courageous and consistent. it's my understanding we're always the student as well as the teacher.
Yes.
And I think that with your story and with the sharing of your journey and all of the variables that you've gone through and the various experiences you've had, because when you were 17, you had a very strong, what some people would call mystical experience. As we're going through this journey of ours, how can you share with my audience the understanding to be patient with where they are in the moment, to be present in the now?
One of the things to be present in the moment is first stop to breathe. You know, from day one, and I think everyone who's listening to me can recognize this, remember from day one, we're born into this world, we're born into what we call a stimula. And the stimula is either done by touch, by taste, a mother's breath. It's the way in which the world is bombarding us with all types of images and sounds, and it just becomes more stronger as we get older. Then as we start to toddle and crawl, we look at things, we see objects, we see televisions, we see noises and sounds and sugar and all types of things that it becomes an overstimulant. Now we're in what we call later teens, and then now we raging hormones and other things are going on, and failed relationships and stuff like that, and we want to be happy. There's an innate thing in all of us from day one, from children, is to have fun and pleasure and be happy. I mean, you can go to any part of the world, whether it's in poverty, a bunch of kids playing around, or in a very wealthy community. And you can look in the poverty community where the kids are playing with glass, broken bottles, and running around and chasing each other. They're having such a wonderful time and laughing and stuff. And the question is, people will say, well, how can they be so happy like that? Don't they know they're poor? And they don't rationalize things like that. Only as we get older, we are taught the value of what happiness is. And so what happens is we start searching and reaching things outside of ourselves instead of going from the inside of ourselves. My particular journey, because I became more introverted in the early years of my life, I started questioning this thing called divine, and this thing called, how can I find this peace or this patience in myself? And what I started to learn through the inner workings and meeting teachers, fools, as well as mystics, I started to understand the nature that if I just quiet my breath, give you an example. I mean, if you notice how you're breathing, notice how many seconds it takes you to inhale and how many seconds it takes you to exhale. Now, if you take it to another level, if you can keep the same inhalation even with the exhalation, notice what happens. In other words, if it takes you 3 seconds to inhale, that'll take you 3 seconds to exhale. That's called controlled breathing. But what does that do? What it starts to do, you start to notice some very interesting thought processes in your mind. The mind is connected to the breath. The breath is connected to the mind. And a lot of times when we're startled, we do that. And we do that. We breathe up into the chest and we crunch up our shoulders. And the minute we become startled, the breath becomes erratic. And when the breath becomes erratic, it affects the thought process. And when the thought process becomes erratic, what happens is we can't think clearly. So now the wrinkle of forehead is wrinkled, the stomach is very tight because we're under tension and we're just stressed. And one of the two things that you may want to be aware of is that when you're in that place is to really focus and soften the belly. And what I learned is to soften the belly and soften the eyes. And if you soften the belly and soften the eyes and keep the hands open, that's the third thing actually. So it's keeping the hands open, soften the belly, and soften eyes, and just remove the wrinkle off your forehead. If you can keep that for about a couple of minutes, you can actually move past the mood of being impatient. Because impatience has to do with what we call angular energy. And so things become very, very, very much a must-do, you know.
My guest today has been Den Dayelle Morgan. His wonderful book, Lone Wolf, In the Company of Fools and Mystics. A wonderful story. Give us your website quickly. We're out of time here.
Yes. The website is pathfinderinstitute.com. That's pathfinderinstitute.com. You can also call 925-695-3121. And you get tremendous amount of information on my web, on some of the programs, the 90-day programs that I have, and many other programs that I have.
Ben Dial Morgan has been my guest today. Lone Wolf in the Company of Fools and Mystics. PathfinderInstitute.com is contact information. No matter how far in this world or what position of life station power that you get, always remain a student of life. That's his quote. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Thank you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I am broadcasting to you live from briskly cool Fairbanks, Alaska, which is in, well, in the 20s. I'll tell you what, it warmed up enough so that it snowed, and it looks like a winter fairyland outside, and people are just buzzing and about and being busy. You know, when I think of when it snows in the Pacific Northwest, things just get wacky and wild. Up here, everybody's out. Nobody cares. Of course, when you live in the far north, that's the way it is. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line. For those of you who are listening, I want to let you know about the toll-free numbers you can call into and chat with me. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number in the U.S. Canadians, 888-810-8322. Let's go to our first caller of the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Kimberly from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hi.
I just wondered, didn't you call me just about a week ago?
No.
Okay. All right. Kimberly, the first thing that I am looking at is a level of education. There's some material that's going to be coming to you. I think you actually are going to be seeking it out. You are going to want to utilize this material to educate you. And I would say this is wonderful. But you also need to question some of the material. And when I say question it, these individuals that will have put the material together, they speak from a level of experience and knowledge that is of value. But you need to remember that you may need to adapt that information to something that is going to be better suited for you. So when you're learning, when you're going through the process, do not be afraid to ask questions. When you ask those questions, you must keep in mind that what someone else went through may have been very appropriate, and you may glean some value out of that. But your situations and your environments are going to be very different. So I encourage you to be wise here. I encourage you to be astute and to be aware that the questioning is a very valuable part of your learning. And what will happen is that you may be able to draw out of this other individual the information that you need that could be adapted to whatever your concern is. But you're going to be in what I feel a learning curve. This isn't a major one. It's a little one. But it's important because it's going to have a direct relationship to your financial independence over the next 6 to 7 years. What question would you like to ask me today?
There's a support group that I started in my town, and it's to help people that are going through crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a challenge in getting the information out to people that actually might need the support. Do you see that expanding in the numbers of folks trying to...
Well, now you need to look at what your objective is. You need to be able to look at the objective from a very level-headed perspective. If you're doing this to save the world, you're going around this the wrong way. If you're doing it because you want to enable others to be aware, and whether you have one or two people in the support meeting or whether you have 500, that's not the issue. The issue is to be aware of what it is you're wanting to accomplish here. And getting the word out, I think, is going to be easier than you feel. You need to be aware of the fact that when you're setting this objective, again, you're not trying to rescue the world. What you want to do is be a facilitator of understanding, insight, and information. Because the reality is, when it comes to any support group, whether it's for addictions or for anything else, it doesn't make any difference. It gives people a safe forum where they're not judged, but where they're going to be empowered to learn how to do things for themselves. So you need to examine your positioning with this, and if you need to make some adjustments, make some adjustments. But I think all it's going to take is being able to deal with one person at a time. And you must hold true to consistency with this. And don't get discouraged about the numbers, because you're not going to have a huge group. It's not going to start out that way.
Okay, well, thank you for your insight.
You're very welcome, hon. And good luck to everything that you do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. Kimberly. This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to call me and chat with me directly, that's how simple it is. You just call one of two numbers in the U.S., 877-876-5227, Canadians, 888-810-8322. We also have a direct line for everyone else of 530-876-9146. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then I also like to know where you're calling from in the country or in a different part of the world. And let me do my thing, and then you're welcome to ask me any question about anything that you're interested in getting insight about. Let's go to our next caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hello, am I online?
Yes, you are, dear. First name or initial, please.
Oh, yes. This is Jackie from Mariposa.
Mariposa, Florida?
No, California.
Mariposa, California.
Yes.
Where is that?
That's in the Sierra Nevadas outside of Yosemite National Park.
Ooh. Yeah. Wow, you live in a gorgeous part of the country.
Oh, I do. It's
wow.
A portal, I'm sure.
Amazing. Okay, Jackie, let's get down to business. First of all, finish writing out your story. You have got some things that you have gone through and experienced that you are wanting to share, and the best way to do it is through the written word. You also are very artistic, and I feel that you're going to link up with a number of different individuals of various talents and skills that, with your artistic perception, along with your writing style, you're going to really have a wonderful time putting everything together. Now, there is a friend of yours that I am seeing, I believe, that's going to be out of state, that is going to be an incredible portrait artist. And as I look at this, I am seeing you telling your story to this person. And this could be by phone. And I'm seeing them doing a drawing. It's like they're drawing this face and this personality. And they put it all together. And they're going to send it to you, and they're going to say, what do you think of what I did when we were talking on the phone? It's going to blow you away. You're going to say, my goodness, you have just captured the personality of this individual that I'm telling about. So you have some very interesting associations, people that are very talented, where there is like a psychic connection. that'll enable you to put together some fascinating things, and I'm looking at you becoming a teacher in about 7 to 10 years and just thoroughly enjoy it. Where you're going to mix art and word in a special way and manner that people are just going to love, and I'd say you need to add music to it. When you add the music, you're going to have the total package.
All right.
So this is something that I think means a lot to you. I am looking at you having another residence. So though you're up in this beautiful part of the country, it is as if this is a healing modality for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have another location that's going to put you in a metropolitan area. And that is going to be the key to what you would consider your financial security because of the work that you're going to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to be economically independent easily in 10 years.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
You're very welcome, but you'll earn every bit of it. Nobody's going to hand you anything on a silver platter.
Yeah.
Do you have a question for me, Jackie?
Well, Donna, lately I've been getting this impression, it keeps coming at me in different ways, that each individual is a portal now, that we're all portals of,
mm-hmm.
of divine energy flow, and I keep feeling angels around me, and I feel like there's angels coming through me, and that I can just almost send them where I want them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder what you think about that, because it's just such a remarkable and wonderful thing.
This is preparing you for some of the work that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to understand is that what you're saying is true. It always has been true.
Mm-hmm.
Every living being, every living thing is a portal.
Mm-hmm.
Every single aspect. Whether it's a rock, a tree, a person. Now, somebody listening to this may say, Donna, you've really flipped out.
Hmm.
But the truth is, it is a reality. There is always this communication that is going on all levels of life,
mm-hmm.
visible and invisible. The fact that you're experiencing the understanding and perception
mm-hmm.
of these various energy modalities is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That is telling me that your body system, your nervous system, is being prepared for some other work. Now, you must be discriminating and thoughtful about the words that you use when you're talking to other people about this, so that they won't think that you're a fruitcake.
Mm-hmm. I've run into that before.
Right. And all it is semantics.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. So you can utilize words effectively in communicating with people, but you must learn how to be able to read, if you will, the dispositioning of whoever or whatever individual or group you might be in the company of.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You are learning how to be comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make anything good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So you are growing in your understanding. And I want to say enjoy the journey,
mm-hmm.
but realize that part of this experience, this learning that you're going through, will enable you to bring it down into what I call ground zero so that it can be used.
Mm-hmm.
Experiencing it is one thing. Utilizing it so it has value is something else.
Pardon? Utilizing it what?
So that it has value.
Oh. Yeah.
Is another situation entirely.
Yes.
And so you're in the process. And I want to say congratulations. It's a wonderful journey to experience.
It is. I'm very happy about it. I've been on a spiritual path all my life. And I had an image when I was like 6 years old of the heavens opening up and like a host of angels coming in, but I told myself that was just my imagination all these years. And now I feel like I'm opening myself up and directing an angelic presence where I feel it's needed.
Each and every person has their own particular experiences, and yours are wonderful. Enjoy them. I'm going to have to go on break, dear. I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you very much, Donna.
It's my pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. Broadcasting live from Fairbanks, Alaska, we're going to take a break. Don't you go away now. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, broadcasting live from Fairbanks, Alaska. I just love technology. You can be in any part of the world and do a radio show and talk to people from other parts of the world. Isn't it exciting? And we're on the Internet where people around the globe are listening to us. And with bbsradio.com, if you miss a show, remember you can always go to the archives. Now, quickly, let me give out the phone number should you want to call in and chat with me. In the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-810-8322. Our direct line is 530-876-9146. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like when I finish my spontaneous impressions. Now, I do want to remind you, I am here in Alaska. If you're listening to me and you're in Alaska, I'm going to be here in Fairbanks through Wednesday afternoon. Then after I finish my broadcast, I'll be flying down to Anchorage. If you'd like to be able to reach me directly, call my 800 number, 872-8852. That's 800-872-8852, because while I'm up here in the far north, I am doing private appointments. Also, I will be heading down for Southern California. I will be in the Los Angeles area on the 17th, the 18th, and the 19th of October. If you want to reach me again to schedule a private appointment, it's 800-872-8852. Then I'm on my way to New York on the 26th and 27th. I will be in New York City. I'm going to be a speaker at the National Publicity Summit, be on their panel there, and I'll be interviewing 100 authors while I'm there. Yes, it's quite an event. I've been very fortunate. They've invited me to participate in this wonderful event for the past few years, and it is always an exciting moment. So that's my itinerary for this month. And again, if you want to talk to me today, it's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-810-8322. Our direct line of 530-876-9146. Tomorrow, who are we going to have on? Well, we're going to be talking about technology. Joe Huber is going to be my guest. He has been nicknamed Mr. Technology. He's got out a publication called Ask Mr. Technology. Then we're on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about how to protect yourself from mortgage fraud. Ralph Roberts is very dedicated to this. His information can be invaluable for any of you that are either in the process of purchasing a home. Maybe you've got somebody that's deciding as an elder member of the family, they want to do something different with their property assets. All of this is very good information, so we're going to be sharing that with you. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Dr. McAvall, and we're going to be talking about his fascinating book, Postmortem, Solving History's Great Medical Mysteries. This is a doctor that likes investigating the unusual, and boy, is it super reading. And then we're going to be talking with one of the talk show hosts here at BBS Radio. Harriel Quinley is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about her Heart Lake Institute, but also something that she designed and developed. It's called Crop Circle Cards. And this is really quite different. So Harriel is going to be on the air with me. We've got a dynamic lineup, and I'm looking forward to sharing all of this with you. So that's what we've got going. Now, I wanted to also just put a thought in your head, because we hear about this so often. Have you heard the attitude of gratitude and how it makes a difference? Well, I came across some information, and I always have to chuckle when I read about research, because sometimes I think to myself, doesn't anybody ever get this? This is really nothing new. But it depends on who you are and what your life journey has been. And many times, if life has not been kind to us, or if we're very young and we haven't had very many lessons in life, we often don't realize how certain things are timeless. And part of what I think as a mature individual, it is my duty and my responsibility to sort of pass along, as I'm sure it is for so many of you, who have gone through some of life's experiences, and you don't have to be Methuselah long in the tooth to be able to talk about them, but we need to understand certain principles work for every generation, no matter where they are in experience. And I wanted to just share with you a little bit of etymology about the word gratitude. The word originated from the Latin word gratis, which means thankful and pleasing, which has its roots in gratia, which means favor, pleasing quality, or goodwill. Now, derivatives of this Latin root can be found in many other languages. In Lithuanian, giriu, it means to praise or to celebrate. In the 13th century, the short prayer before a meal came to be called grace. And in Greek, the word for grace is charis, the root of the word charisma. Gratitude. Fascinating history with it. Well, there was a gentleman, and he lived in Manhattan. His name was David Patrick. And living in New York City, depending on your attitude, it can either be the pits of the pits, because it's one of the most eclectic environments anybody can ever be in, and the pace is just absolutely incredible. I love New York. But he had said to himself, my life is going nowhere. Now, this can happen any place. You don't have to be in New York City, as David was, but it can happen anywhere. Any place in the world. And he said, I'm young, I'm barely making a living, and he was just in a real bad space. And he said, I was trying to figure out, where am I going to go from here? Am I ever going to make it as a writer? And he was, I guess you'd say, a little depressed. He didn't want to get up out of bed. But he couldn't stay there because he had something he had to do, and he had to go to work. So he said he decided to do something, and he can't figure out why he started doing it. He decided to start counting things along the way that made him happy. And he just wanted to see how many pleasant things he came across. One of the first things was a mom walking her baby. It was all bundled up in the stroller. And he said, that little face just made me smile. Then he saw a jet, and he loves to fly. And so he went one thing right after the other. It made a tremendous difference. He said, I was reminding myself that I lived in an exciting, interesting, and invigorating place. So he said, whenever I'm down in the dumps, this is what I do. Now, he did this 20 years ago. Now, the thing is, he ended up going into media. He's happy. He's successful. But he said, I made a choice. Instead of wallowing in misery, I started to live with gratitude. And as I close out the program today, I'd like for you to do the same thing for yourself. You hear me say at the end of the program, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are. Start it with gratitude. And as you high-five your day, go about with this wonderful, wonderful understanding that you can be in control of who you are, what you are, and where you are right at this moment by the attitude of gratitude and the belief in the beauty of life. I've got to go. We're out of time. We'll be broadcasting again tomorrow live from Fairbanks, Alaska. God bless, be well, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.